Welcome to the Science Update Podcast. I'm Bob Hirshon, and this is the podcast for February 26th, 2010.
The Science Update Podcast is produced by AAAS, advancing science, serving society.
It's been an interest of many people in the sciences to get science out to the public.
Superheroes constantly are violating the laws of nature.
5 to 7-year-olds are particularly wedded to a world that is stable and unchanging.
To be scientifically literate is a pleasure, to walk around life and understand some things going on.
This week, we'll tell you about novel ways in which scientists and educators are communicating science to the general public, from using superheroes to illustrate the principles of physics to staging an opera on the life and work of scientists involved in the development of the atomic bomb. First, Suzanne Bard is going to tell you about a science exhibition that was recently developed to teach children about evolution.
According to University of Michigan cognitive psychologist Margaret Evans, if you want to understand biology, it's essential to understand evolution.
It's the fundamental organizing principle in biology. If you don't understand evolution, you can't understand about antibiotic resistance, you can't understand about gene therapy. You have to understand how change occurs over time and how natural selection operates.
But Evans says the concept that species change over time is counterintuitive, especially to young children.
5 to 7-year-olds are particularly wedded to a world that is stable and unchanging. There's a lot of work recently in cognitive development on what we call children's intuitive theories about the natural world. And in fact, adults, if they don't think about it, express the same kinds of theories. So they have an understanding about how people work. They have an understanding about growth and development, children do, and, you know, about objects. They fall, they don't go up, they always come down. So these intuitive concepts that children have about the scientific world, those are the ideas that we are shifting and modifying by exposing them to this information about evolution.
Evans teamed up with science educators to develop a science exhibition that exposes kids to the concept of variation and change.
We did it by focusing on two sort of species that are interesting to children. First of all, birds. We actually did some work and found they're really interested in birds. But of course, the origins of birds, which are the dinosaurs, the shift from one completely kind of different animal to another, was what we explored in this exhibition, where we played on kids' interest in dinosaurs, related it to a modern species, and at the same time introduced them to the basic principles of common descent and natural selection.
Evans says this prepares children for more complex biology classes later on.
So we're preparing them so that when they come to the much more detailed information that they'll get in a course, they're ready to accept and move with those ideas. They have a basic understanding of what common descent, natural selection are all about. And we're also preparing the parents. So the parents, too, are learning along with the children. So that sets them up for conversations later on about evolution. That makes it easier for both parents and children to understand the topic.
Evans says the approach she and her colleagues have taken may shape how evolution is presented in the future.
Thanks, Suzanne. Next, the powers of comic book superheroes clearly violate the laws of physics. But University of Minnesota physicist Jim Kakalias says superheroes help him teach the subject to undergraduates.
I'm trying to convey the fun of physics in what I hope to be a fun and accessible way using these superheroes. There's an interest in them, and so I'm going to take advantage of that to talk about the science. Superheroes constantly are violating the laws of nature. And in fact, using them to illustrate physics principles involves an enormous suspension of disbelief. What I do is I grant each character a one-time miracle exemption from the laws of nature. So the idea is that you take a situation that seems unrealistic, you grant the unrealistic aspect of it, and then look to see if what the characters are doing with their superpowers are then consistent with the laws of physics. And surprisingly, often enough, they are.
He says one of the most famous examples of this is the death of Spider-Man's girlfriend at the hands of the Green Goblin,
which took place in Amazing Spider-Man number 121. The Green Goblin had kidnapped Spider-Man's girlfriend and brought her to the top of the George Washington Bridge in order to lure Spider-Man into battle. During the fight, she's knocked off the bridge, falls to her apparent doom. Spider-Man shoots his webbing down after her, manages to catch her at the last second, but with a very sudden stop. And then when he brings her back up to the top of the bridge, he discovers to his horror that she is in fact dead, even though he caught her. And if you analyze this from a physics point of view and say if an object falls from a bridge tower and falls 300 feet, if you fall in 300 feet, how fast are you going? It turns out to be nearly 95 miles per hour. How much force would the webbing have to exert to stop something moving that fast in, say, half a second? It turns out to be about 9 Gs, 9 times the acceleration due to gravity. And that part doesn't require a suspension of disbelief. It's not unreasonable that your neck would break in such a situation. And in fact, this is why we have airbags in our cars, because when you hit something, your forward motion has to be arrested by some other external force. And if the object is very rigid and stiff, like the steering column or windshield, the time is very short, and so the force has to be very large. Airbags, by deforming under contact, give a bit, and they take longer to stop you, and the longer the time, the smaller the force.
Not surprisingly, his classes are very popular.
Interestingly enough, whenever I use superhero examples, students never wonder when they're going to use this in their real life. But you use these examples, you point out the correct physics that's being applied in there, and then you very quickly segue to examples of the same physics operating in the real world.
Next, Justin Warner reports on research that could help explain why girls and boys have different experiences in math class.
There's some evidence that when people internalize negative stereotypes, it affects their confidence and performance. For example, girls may become anxious about math simply because they've heard girls aren't good at it. Now, a new study suggests that young girls may sometimes acquire this anxiety from their female math teachers. The work comes from the lab of University of Chicago psychologist Sian Bylock and was spearheaded by graduate students Elizabeth Gunderson and Gerardo Ramirez. They assessed math anxiety in female elementary school teachers, as well as their students' tendencies to think boys are better at math than girls. Gunderson says that at the start of the school year, the two were unrelated.
But by the end of the year, there was a significant relationship where the higher the teacher's math anxiety, the more likely the girls were to endorse that gender stereotype.
And the worse those girls actually performed in math. On the other hand, the teacher's math anxiety didn't affect boys' achievement or gender attitudes. Ramirez says he expected that social stereotypes like these would take much longer to sink in.
I think the biggest thing that surprised me was that, one, these kids possess these stereotypes at this young age, and two, they're actually being affected by these stereotypes.
Dr. Bylock notes that elementary school teachers, who are overwhelmingly female, have relatively little math prep built into their training. She says beefing that up may reduce teachers' math anxiety, and in turn, the math anxiety of their female students.
Thanks, Justin. Finally today, Suzanne spoke with a physicist who now finds himself at the forefront of an effort to meld science with performance art.
Not everyone who takes a science class is going to become a scientist, but everyone benefits from basic science literacy.
It's been an interest of many people in the sciences to get science out to the public for many reasons. One, we think it's important, two, to be scientifically literate is a pleasure to walk around life and understand some things going on. A third thing, to become a good citizen, because more and more decisions that are being made have a scientific content.
That's physicist Brian Schwartz, who now heads the City University of New York's Science and the Arts program. He thinks one way to increase science literacy is by creating performance art about science.
A year and a half ago, the Metropolitan Opera did an opera called Dr. Atomic about the building of the bomb with Robert J. Oppenheimer as the head of the Manhattan Project. We had 9 different symposia related to Dr. Atomic, from the ordinary things that you might expect, for example, the playwright, the director, and the singers talking about how they put Dr. Atomic together, to situations where we brought back 11 old-timers who built the bomb, who were involved in the Manhattan Project. The average age was 90 years old. So you're now getting first-hand witnesses and scientists who were involved. And when you deal with issues like the bomb, it's not only history, it's not only science, but it's ethics. It's really earth-changing events. And so now you have a topic which is clearly important, clearly related to science, clearly theatrical and dramatic, and there was just so much that you could do with it.
Schwartz and his colleagues are currently working with universities to bring science and arts departments together to collaborate on performance pieces.
Thanks for that report, Suzanne. Well, that's all we have for you this week. Next week, everyone knows that talking on the cell phone while driving is both distracting and dangerous, but we'll give you another reason to put off your conversations for later. And while you're resting your cell phone, your t-shirt could be charging it. We'll have a report on nanotechnology advances that could lead to wearable batteries. But if you can't wait for next week's podcast, you can get a daily dose of science by listening to the Science Update Podcast Daily Edition every day, Monday through Friday. You can find it on our website, scienceupdate.com, or at iTunes. Thanks for listening. I'm Bob Hirshon for AAAS, the Science Society.